Good evening, everyone. Happy Shabbat. My pleasure to be with you. We don't have JB, so I don't see names by everybody's little icon on the switchboard, but I'm assuming we have Larry and Kirk here. Is that correct?
Kirk here.
Hi, Kirk.
Larry here.
Hi, Larry. By the way, thank you guys for filling in for me last Friday. This was our first day in this new house here in Ohio, and the movers had just left, and my son and daughter-in-law had just arrived, and we were eating our first dinner in the house, and the idea of me spending 5 minutes with them and dinner and running down and doing the show, particularly as exhausted as we were, didn't seem like that was going to work. So thank you guys for doing that.
Oh, you're welcome. It was no problem at all. JB and I did the show, and it was fine.
Good. Well, thank you. Well, anything new and exciting in your guys' world before we jump into the Torah?
Well, I think about the only noteworthy debate I've had all week was a guy trying to say that, yeah, pretty much the Quran and the Old Testament are the same. Obviously, never read it.
Yeah, I mean, my guess is he hasn't read either. But because if you were to read one or the other and compare it to the behavior of Muslims, you know, so if you read the Torah and compared it to the behavior of Muslims, you read the Quran and compared it to the behavior of Jews, it would be obvious. So the individual didn't read either. Yeah, I know that.
Well, it's like anybody else that makes unsubstantiated claims. They think it sounds reasonable because they think they're talking about religious texts. Well, in this case, one's a religious text. The other one is not religious at all. So I don't know how anybody could compare probably the most stringent religion that I know of anyway.
Yeah.
And then compare it with something that is totally anti-religion.
Right,
I let him know that.
Total and complete imposition of religion, and where everyone is considered a slave of the God, and the God is fearsome and terroristic. And then
a slave master, that's what he was saying.
Right, and the other where the God says, please, you know, if you want to be religious, that's up to you, but if you want to have a relationship with me, I don't want you to be religious. And where he says, my whole goal here is to free you. I'm a liberator. I'd like to adopt you as my kid. I will tell
one,
you.
One provides you all the choices you'll ever need. The other provides no choice at all. And no. I mean that's one's the antithesis of the other.
One of the most brilliant document ever written that is precisely accurate from a historical point of view, scientific point of view. It's filled with extraordinarily accurate prophecies and presents the most wonderful opportunity we as humans have ever been offered. And the other is drivel.
I wanted to ask, did you get the video I sent over on the book I'm Sure Did?
No, I may have, but I'm so far behind on my yada yada emails just because of all the commotion that's been part of trying to get settled in this house. I'm nowhere near settled, but
that was speaking of two things, it was fairly new to me because what he has actually done is taken the Hebrew numerical value of words and ran them against NASA, say as an example for the diameter of the Earth in the diameter of the Moon, and it's encoded right in the name. It also wavelengths the speed of light in different colors. And
really?
They line up on a perfect. It is astounding. I'm going to go get the book this week, but it's astounding, and that's why I sent it to you. It's about a half hour watch. What they did was made a movie out of the meat of the book, and it is undeniable for anybody that has 1 ounce of reason in them that only the creator of the universe could have done this. Even the word that means motionless ends up with a HNB value of zero. I mean, and light, it tells you how fast light and how fast sound moves. And it's all matched against NASA. You just have to watch it. It's just incredible.
Yes, sir,
you know, Hebrew is a completely numeric language. You know, if you the first nine number, the first nine letters are all numbers, and then then after that you have the 10 spots, the 10 places. So it's a 10 based numerical system, and so letters 10 through 20 cover the 10 spots, and then there the next letters are. Convey the 100th place. So
yep,
you know, it is a whole numeric language. You know, it's also interesting too. If you look at the Hebrew alphabet in the third iteration, you know, the first iteration is the one that we like the most. It's the one that the Torah was originally written in. It's the one with the pictures. So you don't even have to be literate. You can read Hebrew without being literate. The second iteration of the language. I took on more of an alphabetic form. But the third iteration is actually what we would refer to today as Arabic numerals. The Arabic numerals, as you might guess, since Arabic is based on Hebrew, an alpha is a one, a beth is a two, and it's written like a two, like the numeral two. And so all the way through each of the letters is a numeral. So it would not surprise me that could be encoded into it.
Oh, it is encoded, and it's proven out there. He does it. Well, what you end up getting is straight lines that have a 99.8 certainty rate, and it doesn't matter if you're dealing with the speed of sound, light, the wavelengths of, say, the color, magenta, you know, whatever it reads in Hebrew, it matches completely up with all those things. And again, it's astounding. I sent it over to you. It's worth watching. I mean, whoever did it doesn't use a lot of religious language, but when he does, he says the Lord and something a couple times. So if you can completely disregard that. And disregard the snowflake looking like the Star of David. If you can disregard those two things, you've got 40 minutes of serious meat, and it's really strong. I was so astounded to watch. I've watched it four times, and I'm going to go out and get the book next week.
It's interesting for me in that. Somewhere along the way, and this was years ago, and I don't know how far I was into the process, where added affirmation through prophecy or through scientific insights, whatever it might be, just brilliant communication, lost its interest for me. And it's lost its interest for me because another affirmation of what I was absolutely convinced at this point was true. It was the opposite of where I was when I was religious. Where I was religious, any kind of an affirmation, I was just drawn to it like a moth to a candlelight. But somewhere along the way, in finding affirmation after affirmation, confirmation after confirmation, I went from thirsty to learn more to, okay, that point's proven. Now all I want to do is study that which helps me know Yahweh better. And I think you're in the same boat. But what the reason I'm interested in this is because while that's where I am, and that's where you guys
are. There you
are,
go.
It's not where everyone is. And it's still a responsibility for us to relate to those that are not where we are.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say. It's just something that I can actually say, okay, I want you to watch a half hour of this and then come back and talk to me. Because by the time you're finished with this, if you can say this isn't true, well, then you're a moron. You know, you don't have encoded wavelengths and names. You know, you just don't in any language, but there is in Hebrew. It's astounding.
Yeah, what doesn't surprise me is that there are things that are so insightful as to who Yahweh is and how He created this delicate matter that would enable not only life but also enable time to play out on His 6+1 formula with free will, that are so extraordinary. I'm not surprised that He put them into the equation, nor am I surprised that He would have used His alphabet and language to calibrate the equation that became our universe. Because He spoke the universe into existence, why not embed the letters and the words with the very formula that He used to discern the amount of energy and the relationship of energy and matter that would be our universe? You just look at little things like the sun and the moon and the distance the moon is and the sun away from the earth, so that you can get a total and complete eclipse and still see a little of the moon's light curve around the moon, because at their relative distance and relative size from the earth, they are absolutely a perfect fit. And it's just one of those little things that says, yeah, what are the chances that was planned? Because it's one in a billion that they would be, that event would
right. And any reasonable person is going to be looking at it at that point. I just think it is. It was astounding, and there's so much to it. Movement, speeds, diameters of.
And the speed of light is so essential to everything. It's the universal constant, and light is the common denominator of everything that Yahweh is, conveys once. Light is essential to enlightenment. Light is eternal. It's the place where time simply exists. To be light is to be perfect. It's to have no darkness. Light is just kind of the ultimate common denominator in everything that Yahweh has to say. And so if the wavelengths of light and the speed of light are equated through Yahweh's vocabulary and through His letters, why should we be surprised?
That's what Terry said when we saw the film. We got it from Larry's webpage, Facebook.
Yes.
And we watched it, and she said, as marvelous as it is, our perspective is so different now that we would expect to find that to be true. It wasn't like he had to prove it to me once he put the numbers down and he drew the graphs and everything. He said, isn't that astounding? And I said, well, yes, it is, but I almost kind of expect.
Well, this
goes back to the 1 in billion thing.
Anymore. Yeah, I'm really seldom impressed anymore.
Yeah, but you don't need to be.
His dad is just so stunningly remarkable and so humble about it that I don't think that was anything to impress anymore, but he does things for us to find and enjoy, and this is one more of it. I would say that when the math works out for the 15 billion years that the universe has been in existence to 6 24-hour days, once you're past that one, I don't know what you can do for a crescendo.
By the way, you're right, but here's a kicker. If you watch that, it's encoded in the word for what a day equals in His. It's encoded. It's encoded in that.
Well, that's not surprising, because yom is such a strange word to describe day, because yom means a hot period. And so I always wondered why Yahweh used yom to convey day. And if the answer
creation
is,
was a hot time, you know?
Right? That creation was a very hot, extraordinary expenditure of energy. I understood that, and then what you're saying is that Yom exists because, well, coded in the word is the time line for
right.
Creation.
That's right. That happens to be a fact. You'll see it and you'll go, wow. I mean, without the math, it's right there. It is right there.
Yeah. I would love to know what the real code is about the letters in Yahweh's name. Is this
well?
I know individual
can do it. You can do it. He shows you how. There's also one other thing I want to point out. You know that you did where you say you're not impressed anymore. Not nearly as impressed. Although
right.
I'm blown away when I see things like that inculcated into a single word. You did some relatively amazing work on Alexander and how he died.
Yes.
And I put that note out, and I thought it was astounding, that Waha Shabar, it was talked about internal membranes rupturing.
Right.
Yet not too many people really had much to say about that. There was 13, 14, 15 people that gave it a thumbs up, and there were just a couple of real basic comments on the bottom. But that kind of blew me away.
Yeah, one of the ones that blew me away is when I read in the story of the flood how it was that the flood was started by an upwelling of seawater, of salt water.
Yeah,
the ocean water began the flood, and then you learn about the Burkle impact crater at precisely that time and the size of the crater and how it would have created the upwelling of seawater, which gives the explanation of how the Black Sea went from fresh water to salt water and then busted through and created the Bosphorus Straits at that period of time, and then how the debris from that impact crater would have created the 40 days and 40 nights of rain. I remember reading that and saying, okay, that's pretty impressive.
I was in the same boat. I mean, that's just an astounding fact.
Or the dimensions of the ark being with computer-aided design, the best shipbuilder, the dimensions the best shipbuilder would use today. To create a ship of the same size, they would use exactly those dimensions were 5,000 years ahead of their time. That was pretty impressive.
Yeah, that was as impressive as well. But just to see one word, I'm telling you, you've got to watch this thing.
I was impressed thinking of the ark. I was impressed when I recognized that with Noah, no matter how diligent Noah would have been, it would have been impossible for Noah and his sons to have hewn and carried the beams for a ship of this size. But then when I learned that the words that Yahweh used described a glue lamb, which is what we use today, where you take much smaller pieces of wood, but you glue them together to create a structure that is vastly stronger than one piece of wood, and yet could easily be handled by four men.
Hmm.
That was pretty impressive.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah. All right, well, we're going to, and I will, I'll watch that. What I would like to do is let's dive into the Yobel. We're approaching a Yobel year. 2033 in our pagan calendars is a Yobel year. It's year 6,000 Yah. The world right now is extraordinarily screwed up with all manner of economic corruption through fiat money and central banks, with all manner of banking malfeasance, with stratification of economics, with redistribution of wealth that is designed to transfer money from those who are productive to those who are not. And we're creating an environment. And I think it was Ukirk who said this today was, you know, we claim that we're free and that, like, we own our houses, but we're paying the government a tax on it, which means that the government thinks they own it.
Yeah, they do.
You know, we think we own our businesses, but wait a minute, we're paying the government the largest share of the profits as if they were the largest shareholder.
Yeah.
The government tells us that we have to collect taxes from our employees and that we have to offer our employees this, that, and the other thing, including health care. They're setting the rules. So aren't we simply servants of the government? Serfs?
That's pretty clear.
And, you know, we've
yes.
created a generation now that is wholly dependent on government, that, you know, goes into the market with their food stamps, that lives in government housing, that receives a government welfare check, that you know, is wholly dependent on government from crib to grave. It's not Yahweh's model.
No.
So I thought we'd talk a little bit about Yahweh's model and how it fits, because this is what we're moving towards, and we're, you know, in at 2015, we're not all that far away from 2033. We are fast approaching year 6,000 Yah.
Well, but, and you might as well also look at it as 2026, because anything that resembles any semblance of freedom, even in a minor way, will be eliminated by that time, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, whether it's 2026 or 2030 in terms of complete capitulation, you know, I'm not even sure it matters, because most semblance of freedom is going to dissipate even before 2026. And, of course, the tribulation begins in 2026, and 2030 is the midpoint, is the time where the beast will, the Torahless one, is going to essentially control everything, and that you either acquiesce to him, you either submit to him, or you're going to be completely isolated. Can't buy, can't sell, can't own. You won't have any money, any ability to do anything other than cling to Yahweh for help. Unfortunately, we're not going to be there.
So where are we going to start on the Yobel?
I want to start in it's Shemot, names, Exodus 19, the presentation of the discussion that brings us to the Yobel starts around the fifth verse, and there's a lot of things that Yahweh has to say about the Yobel. The Yobel is introduced here, but then it's expanded upon after the presentation of, you know, you've got the 10 statements that Yahweh etched in stone, you've got the invitations, the mikra to meet with him, and then that's followed by the Yobel. It's you know, right at the heart of the Torah are the big three that enable, if you will, the covenant. So it begins, and now, if you genuinely, consistently, and absolutely, without reservation, listen to my voice, and you choose to consistently, genuinely, and completely observe that which is associated with my covenant, then you will exist on my behalf, be able to approach me and be with me as a highly valued, set apart, protected and treasured commodity, distinct and separated from all other people. Because indeed, on behalf of the entire realm, the earth, you yourselves shall actually and continually exist as a realm of ministerial messengers, a people set apart. These are the godly words and statements which relationally and beneficially you should continually speak to the children who engage and endure with God. Now, that's a mouthful, folks. My conclusion just on Shemot 19, 5, and 6 is that we could do a month of programs on what was just said. And if we do, fine. But I want to just go word for word here and discuss this, because this, you know, Larry and Kirk, I mean, I'm looking forward to seeing the video and seeing the brilliance of Yah is always enlightening. It's always entertaining. It's always heartwarming. It's always fun to see how smart Dad is. But ultimately, the principal mission that we have in life is to get to know who he is, what he's offering, how we benefit from what he's offering in such a way that we're not only able to maximize the productivity and enjoyment of our relationship, but so that we can do what you guys are doing, which is to share what we've come to know about God with others. This is one of those statements that fits right into the heart of this is who God is, this is what he's encouraging us to do, and here's the benefit if we do it. So, and now, Atah, so then, right now, folks, pay attention, and now, right now, if you genuinely, consistently, and absolutely, without revelation, without reservation, listen to. Now, a lot of English words there. All that's written there is listen, listen. Shama, shama. But when a Hebrew word is repeated, particularly a Hebrew verb, what does it mean?
Pay real close attention.
Yeah, whole emphasis.
Yeah. What it does is it makes an exponential of that verb. You know, it's like putting a squared after a number so that you're multiplying the number by itself. You know, 10 squared is a lot bigger than 12. 10 squared is 100. It's 10 times 10. When a Hebrew word is written back to back, it's like that number to an exponential.
Squared.
Whether it's squared or seven, you know, sevenfold, I can't tell you exactly the strength differential, and maybe, you know, it gets down to a question of, you know, limited perspective and limited insights now. But you ought to always think of a repeated Hebrew word as an exponential. So it's everything that you can imagine about listening. So that's why I wrote genuinely, because, you know, if you're really focused on your on listening, and this is something that you're genuinely committed to do, that strengthens it. Consistently would be a reflection of the imperfect conjugation. Absolutely would be a derivative of, the consequence of, the call stem. Without reservation, and the reason I wrote without reservation is that you have an exponential here. I mean, genuinely can be part of the call stem, too. So he could have conveyed genuinely, actually, absolutely with the call stem, and he could have conveyed consistently and continually with the imperfect conjugation. So yet you still have to account for Shama squared. And so that's why I say without reservation. So this is every possible way that you can imagine gaining from focusing on listening to what God has to say. So he's saying, this is a hypothetical. This doesn't say all the good things that happen here are a result of you paying, you doing the first part. If you blow off the first part, you don't get any of the benefits. So if you genuinely, consistently, and absolutely without reservation listen to Shema, if you hear and pay especially close attention to call infinite, absolute, call imperfect, my voice. Now, if you read an English Bible, what's it going to say there? It's going to say, if you obey my voice,
obey my
you obey my commands.
All, commands, probably.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, but Shama means to listen. If you listen to my voice, now how could you listen to Yahweh's voice? I mean,
read the Torah.
Yeah, read the Torah. Read the Torah out loud.
Since he calls them his words, it might be a good idea. You know,
there are some voices, like there you have the kind of voice. If I wanted to hear somebody read the Torah because I want to listen to God, I'd have in your voice. One of the nice things that we all have the benefit of is that the way our own voice resonates within us, we don't hear ourselves as we actually sound to others. But there's a depth and a resonance of our voice that comes from within us when we say speak something out loud. That way we hear it because we're actually feeling it from the inside out. And so when I'm reading Yahweh's testimony, most of the time, even if it's just me alone, I'm reciting it. I like the way it sounds. I like the way it feels. You guys do that, or by the on my
no, own? No, absolutely.
No, I don't. Maybe I should.
I'm not saying you should, but it's an interesting. You've got the ultimate voice to do it. I just like the way the words feel coming from inside. So I do think that. I'm going to speculate here. And Larry, and I don't make you want you to feel bad because you said you don't do it, and we do it. But I'm going to speculate here. Pure speculation. Yahweh has verbs that he uses over and over and over again. His advice to us is always falls under these two verbs, probably comprise 90% of Yahweh's advice to us. You know what those two verbs are?
Shamar
is one. The Shamar is the other. Listen and observe. Okay. So he's got these two verbs that he's constantly encouraging us to act upon these two verbs. One is to listen, the other is to observe. Okay, we observe with our eyes. We use our eyes to read. We use our eyes to closely examine. And the eyes are the fastest implement we have to move from that which is surrounding us into our brains. It's just direct input into the brains, particularly if you're observing written words, because we think in words. So he's got one of them is to use your eyes to observe, and the other one is to listen. So I put those things together. If you're using your eyes, since he's constantly encouraging us to do both, if you're using your eyes to read Yahweh's testimony, why not speak it out loud so that you can listen to the words? That's the only way that you can listen to God, really, is to speak his words.
And when you're with somebody, you and I have been reading to each other since we started this journey. So, that's really cool, too. But I agree.
Absolutely.
I know we're talking about two different things, but that's another plus.
Right.
It's good to read each other.
Right. Now, Yahweh says two different things here. He brings both verbs together. In this particular case, he's telling us both verbs. So the first one is, listen to my voice. And the second is that you should choose to consistently, genuinely, and completely observe. Shamar. You should, of your own volition, elect to continually, actually, and totally examine and consider. Call, perfect, consecutive. So the consecutive is expressing volition. The call is genuinely, literally, actually. And the perfect is totally. So we have listen, and observe. Listen, and observe. I think that's really all that God is asking of us. We listen to it. It's all these Muslims just finished their Ramadan, and they're all at the mosque. I drove by a mosque, and every parking spot was filled because this was the last day of Ramadan, and it was on a Friday. And whoop-de-doo. And they're all down there mooning God, you know, bowing down to Satan and praying and reciting some drivel of a prayer. God is so smart that his approach is, before you yabber at me, why don't you listen to what I have to say? Before you tell me what you want and what you need, why don't you listen to what I'm offering? Why don't we play this game smart, and you consider what I have to say and the terms and conditions of the covenant that I'm offering and its benefits, and then let's talk about it. So that's what's being presented here. And now, if you genuinely, consistently, absolutely, without reservation, listen to my voice, and you choose to consistently and completely observe, closely examine, and carefully consider that which is associated with F, my covenant, then you will exist on my behalf and be able to approach me and be with me, a highly valued, set-apart, protected, and treasured commodity, distinct and separated from all other people. So, to be valuable to God, I seek to be. I want God to view me as valuable. I want him to be, you know, valuable enough to view me as a son, to take care of me. My son was over for dinner tonight. You know, we played 9 holes of golf today. He took a day off work. And his pregnant wife was splashing around in my swimming pool, and we came and had dinner at the house. And you know, I'll tell you what, we're talking about how much I value family and sons. So I want to be valued by God even more highly than I value my son and daughter-in-law. And I don't think there's anything more worthwhile in life than to be valued by God.
Can I just say that when you first time I heard you say that, you know, and maybe we ought to shut up and listen to him instead of talking so much to him, I stopped praying like from the start. That was it. I just don't need to. I mean, it's different than asking God to help you understand something, of course.
Right.
But you know what I mean? It became futile to do anything but listen to him.
Oh, yeah. When I finally realized, I realized very early on in the process that praying to God was a farce. I was told how good I was at it, and I was just the most miserable person in the world when I was leading public prayers. I hated it because I knew people by the hundreds would flock to me and say, "Oh, you were so good at that." And I was just, oh, God, because I knew I wasn't talking to God. I was talking to the audience. I know every preacher that's ever done a public prayer, he's not talking to God, he's talking to the audience. And then you think, wait a minute, who are we to tell God what we want and what we need? Shouldn't we take a moment and listen to him? And then when it dawned on me that he's telling us constantly to Shamar and to Shama to listen and to pay close attention to what he has said and has written for us, all of a sudden, I was having wonderful conversations with God because I was listening to him. You know how much more interesting God is than I am? So it is all about, you want to have a great conversation with God? Listen to it. You know, Larry, you were listening to the value of the numbers. The numbers mm-hmm. that were inscribed in all these things. And so you were learning from the Creator about how he formalized creation by literally writing the formulas into the letters that comprised his words. And so didn't you feel like you were listening to him?
Yeah, I was. It was so astounding. I mean, you said before you might know a billionth of the Torah. When you start considering all these things that are inculcated into the writings, I'd be surprised if any of us knew that much.
Right. So there's a lot to listen to. But in this particular case, he has specified one thing. He says, if you will listen to what I have to say and closely examine and carefully consider what I've written about this one thing, that I'm going to value you, I'm going to protect you, I'm going to set you apart, I'm going to treasure
you,
distinct and separated from all other people. One thing. There's only one thing. And did he say that it was Judaism? Did he say it was Christianity? Did he say it was the law? What did he say? One thing. Covenant.
Covenant.
Just pay attention to the family. Pay attention to the family. Beth. You know, be family and home. The why, the God. My hand, as dad, reaching down and out to you with an open hand. And the TH, which is, you got my signature on this. This has got my brand, my mark. It's my family. It's my hand. My home.
There's two letters of your bill, by the way.
Yeah. So, there's only one thing that we have to, if we pay attention to only one thing, and it's of all the things that I have done in my my journey through Yah's testimony, for me now, you know, we talked about what impresses us and, you know, what we like and what, you know, what resonates with us now. For me, it's singular. It's the covenant. All the rest of it's window dressing. All the rest of it is means to facilitate our approach to the covenant. But everything, the light, the planet, the moon, life, everything exists for the covenant. There is, the covenant is it. It's the core. It's the heart. It's the soul. It's the end-all of everything. There is nothing more important than the covenant. And Yahweh says, if you just do this one thing, if you listen to what I have to say about the covenant, if you closely examine and carefully consider what I have to say about the covenant, then you're going to be special to me, valuable and treasured. Now, if you have a son or daughter, or a wife or a husband, and they are, you treasure them, are you going to do everything you can to make their lives rich and exciting and rewarding and protect them and care for them?
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah, of course.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's what Yahweh is saying here. You're going to be a treasured commodity. A people mm-hmm. set apart, highly valued and protected. You know, and we have come from a culture that causes people, that trains people, indoctrinates people to value God. See, the thing that tripped in my mind was why the covenant became so enormously important is that what God is saying here is far more important. Rather than us doing anything more than respecting and revering Yahweh, which is really all he asks of us, he is the one who is treasuring and valuing us. Now, why would the creator of the universe treasure Kirk?
Only what? He could say. Only he could say that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I think maybe because Kirk's taking the time to listen, you know,
yeah,
he understands his voice is coming through all these dimensions and trickle down to him,
yeah,
and he actually
exactly.
believes what's undeniably true.
Right.
You know?
Right. You know, why is it that there's this gruff, blunt, bold, uncompromising, sometimes a gruff and irascible guy named Larry? Why does Yahweh treasure him? Why does he value you?
Same reason.
Hey, you're
because
flawed
he's got
guy.
A
why
sense of humor,
you?
Pal. He's got a
yeah,
sense of humor.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, he does.
That's what it is.
Yeah, you know why? I think he likes you for the same reason he fell in love with Dode. You guys are both irascible. You both have a backbone. You're both courage. You'll stand up to anybody. You take no nonsense.
Well,
you
know, I kind of picked that up. Kind of picked that up, you know, in my life, but it was certainly solidified listening to you and Yoel for years. doing Yada Radio. I mean, you know, that's one of the things Yoel said about you. He says, you know, most people might take their head off, but you'll do it with a lawnmower. I remember that. And I thought, yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah.
You know, and I know you will, too. So,
yeah,
you know, something,
absolutely.
It wouldn't matter to you if you were in a crowd of a million and they were all against you, you'd stand up. And that's where we really have to be anyway. So we might as well get used to it. Yeah.
Exactly. And Yahweh is like that, and he likes that. And so it is extraordinarily important for us to change our perspective from bowing down and worshiping a god to the perspective of that our God bows down, gets down on his knees because he loves us. And so the whole perspective is, I'll lift you up. I'll do everything I can to empower and enrich and to meet all of your needs, value you more than life itself, if you'll simply do this one thing. Listen to and observe my covenant. If you do that one thing, I'll value you more than all of the universe. Now, the universe isn't set apart, but we will be.
It's a big issue, and it's something I've thought about really recently, exactly what we're talking about here. When the reality is that
Yeah, there's an echo there or some other.
Okay. The reality being that Yahweh's in this other dimension, really. I mean,
right.
And these words of his are echoing down to our dimension. And all Yahweh's really doing, I'm not going to say all, but what he's doing is he's directing us towards him if we decide to do that in a very advanced way. And how many people seriously look at it along those lines? Because most people are taught that, as an example, God's omnipresent. He's everywhere. He's just listening to everybody all the time. You know, and of course, we know that's not true.
Right. 7 billion voices with most of them being
opposed to it,
being immoral, being incapable of exercising good judgment, having no interest in listening to him. How many people do you think on planet Earth today? There's 7 billion people on Earth today. How many people on Earth at this moment, at the celebration of the Shabbat, are listening to what Yahweh had to say?
Probably less than 1,000. I would bet.
Yeah, I bet there's less than 1,000 people at this moment at the dawn of this Shabbat that are listening to Yahweh. You know, it was interesting that today as I was driving back from the golf course with my son. There was a church, you know, they always have the next sermon on their marquee. And the sermon read the following: God never takes a vacation. God never takes a vacation. And I said, wait a minute.
What's Sukkot?
What's the purpose of the Shabbat? Didn't Yahweh say, in 6 days I created the heavens and the earth, and the seventh day I took a vacation? Didn't he say that?
No.
What part of that is, doesn't Yahweh encourage us to meet with him 7 times a year to have these great parties, to take a vacation from our ordinary work?
Yep.
I mean, Yahweh's into vacations. Then I turned to my son and said, would you want to spend eternity with a deity that didn't ever take vacations? And I said, no. I said, no, of course not. He said, worst of all, can you imagine spending eternity with a deity that wanted you to worship him?
Yeah. If there's worship involved, we're not talking about Yahweh. He doesn't have that kind of an ego problem.
No. But it's just so amazing how few people listen to God. So here's this minister there that thinks he's speaking for God, telling people the truth, that God never takes a vacation. Well, you better be working so you can pay me. God never takes a vacation. God's talking about vacations all the time. Isn't the yoga a vacation?
Yeah.
The very Yule Belly we're talking about. Yeah, it's a vacation. Now, the word vacation is something that is different than time with the family and friends away from your normal work. That's the whole purpose of the Shabbat.
Well, the whole purpose of the Shabbat is that and the foreshadowing of a 1,000-year sukkah. You know, that's huge.
Where we take this great vacation from life as we know it in the negativity of human institutions, and we vacation with God here on earth for 1,000 years. So you know, we can actually live here on earth as it was intended.
Yeah, that's what all this work is leading up to. And it's not work, but you understand what I mean. It's just incredible. Anybody who would say that doesn't know Yahweh. Of course, we know anybody that's got a marquee out in front of a religious institution named after a sun goddess.
It's
a hell of a problem.
So when Yahweh said this, he said, "And if you genuinely, consistently, and absolutely, without reservation, listen to my voice, and you choose to consistently, genuinely, and completely observe that which is associated with my covenant, then you will exist on my behalf, be able to approach me and be with me as a highly valued, set apart, and protected, treasured commodity, distinct and separated from all people." Does that sound to me like a God who can't save?
No, you does that sound so far removed from Christianity you can't stand it?
Well, you can't stand it.
The whole dialect so far is like...
Does that sound like a covenant that that was replaced because it was obsolete?
Yeah, well,
that you can't do what I have stated in my covenant. And so, since you can't do it, and it's a bunch of legalistic mumbo-jumbo anyway, it's not going to do you a damn bit of good. But, you know, so don't listen to me. Why don't you just pay attention? A guy named Paul is going to come along. You can listen to him instead. You'll like what he has to say. Is that what he wrote?
No.
No. I mean, God is saying that this one and only covenant of mine, I've got one family, and that family, if you pay attention to what's associated with that family, you're going to be valuable to me. I'm going to protect you. I'm going to care for you. You're going to be separated unto me, treasured by me, if you just pay attention to what's in the covenant. And so it gets right back down to the heart of everything. You want to be saved? Observe the covenant. You want to have a relationship with God? Observe the covenant. You want to be empowered? Observe the covenant. You want to be enriched? Observe the covenant. You want to be perfected? Observe the covenant. You want to be immortal? Observe the covenant. Everything that we can want, everything that has any value. You want to inherit everything that exists in the universe? Read the covenant. You want to spend time going through the universe with the designer of the universe? Read the covenant. Study the covenant. If you know nothing more than what Yahweh asked of Abraham and what he offered to Abraham, that's enough. That's all you need to do. All the rest of it is educational. All the rest of it's beneficial. All the rest of it's enlightening. All the rest of it is affirming. But that's all you really need to do. Now, I'm going to tell you that if you do that, then you're going to be interested in what the Yobel has to say and how the Yobel affirms this and sheds light on it and provides a wonderful perspective, because the Yobel provides a marvelous perspective on how Yahweh enables the covenant and Yahweh's perspective towards us as members of his family, liberating us, freeing us, forgiving us. You know, it's all part of the Yobel, but all you really need to do is this one line, is Shemot. That's all you got to do. So, while we're here to talk about the Yobel tonight, the Yobel is simply an illustrative example of what our Heavenly Father does for us as His children when we engage in the covenant. So folks, there is only one covenant. At this time, when Yahweh was making this promise, and he was making this promise for all time for his children, where could you find information on the covenant?
In the Torah. I mean, it's amazing that the answer is always the Torah. It sounds kind of stupid. We go, the Torah.
Okay. You know,
what's more amazing is how few people even know that.
Where else could you go to listen to Yahweh, and where else could you go to observe what he had to say?
There is no
other place. It was strictly the Torah. And so Yahweh here is offering us the opportunity to be part of his Torah, and to do so with benefits forever, and all we have to do is listen to what he had to say in his Torah. Just so we're clear here, the Torah opens with Yahweh's presentation of creation so we'd know who he is and why he did it, and he presents the timeline for all eternity in his creation account. And then he goes into the account to tell us, this is the kind of relationship I'm seeking and I'm offering with the story of Adam and in the Garden of Eden. And then he talks about, this is the kind of stuff that I'm trying to avoid, but the great measures I'll go to protect those that I love, those who have chosen to be part of my family with the flood. And from there, where do we go? What's next?
And after Noah?
And what comes after Noah?
Well, then we're going to Abraham.
All right. And all of a sudden, rather than a few words here and there and a chapter here and there, we have chapter upon chapter upon chapter upon chapter of, I'm going to call you out of Babel, and I'm going to lead you to my home in the promised land, and I'm going to provide you with this marvelous inheritance. And so you have the whole story of Abraham, which is followed by the story of Joseph, which is necessary because we as humans got ourselves dependent upon government, dependent upon religion, enslaved by human institutions, and Joseph is the prototype for Yahweh's role as Yahusha, leading us out of this morass of humanity. And that brings us then to the actual story of the Exodus, of God leading us away from religion and politics, and the means that he used to free us and to liberate us and then to cleanse us and perfect us once we have shown a willingness to meet with him on this path to his home and then adopt us into his family. This is what comes after that. So it's not just the answers in the Torah. This is the whole flow of information, the perspective, is right here. You don't have to go any further than the Yovel. Now, it's true that as you move into Kara, the very dates and the process that Yahweh used for us to walk to him is then codified, presented, explained in Kara as it was first depicted in Exodus, in Shemot. But the 1, 2, 3, once you get to 1, 2, 3, there really isn't much more that you need to learn. Because really all Devarim does, words, is it summarizes all this. It provides a unique human perspective on it to explain it so we can think about it. But it's all right here.
That's all right here.
All right. Now, this goes on to say, because indeed, on behalf of the entire earth, you yourselves shall actually and continually exist as a realm of ministerial messengers, Mamalaka, a people set apart. So this is the second time he's mentioned set apart. So the set apart thing is really important. But he's saying that distinct from all people, across the whole earth, but Mamlaka is and it's Mamlaka Kohen. Mamlaka is a reign and kingdom of priestly witnesses from Malak, authorized messengers. Yahweh really has no. So long as you don't consider priest as a religious term, and you look at a Kohen as someone who serves in this regard, and you're serving the interests of the family. In this particular case, we're serving as messengers. You know, I had once thought that men are not messengers, that just the Malak are messengers. But what he's doing here is that if you're part of the covenant family and you understand the terms and conditions of the covenant, the benefits of the covenant, you can serve as my ministers and as my messengers at that point.
Well, that's the message of heaven's sevens.
Yeah.
I mean, he empowered them to do that. He didn't say, I'm going to empower you to send an angel to do it for you. So obviously, him. Always.
Yes. So we are in fact being empowered to serve as Yahweh's envoys and messengers. That's a big responsibility, because indeed, on behalf of the entire earth, you yourselves shall actually and contentedly exist as my ministerial messengers. Now, think of that for a moment. You know, Christians think that the Great Commission was something that their Jesus gave through the disciples. But wait a minute. You know, if you take a step back, you'll find that there's nothing Yahusha said that wasn't already written in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. Isn't this the Great Commission?
Mm-hmm.
It says, if you pay attention to what I had to say about the covenant, if you listen to what I had to say about the covenant, then you shall be my witnesses for the whole world. This is the Great Commission. This is what Yahusha was saying to the disciples. It was already said in the Torah. These are the godly words and statements which relationally and beneficially you should continually speak to the children who engage and endure with God. All right. He has now created a distinction. We are witnesses to the world, which is what we do. It's why we do the programs, why we write the books, it's why you have the Facebook sites. It's why we do everything. We are, in fact, messengers and witnesses to the world. But he's also saying that more than just doing this for the world, we ought to constantly share this with the family,
mm-hmm.
with Yisrael, with those who engage and endure with God. With family members, it doesn't affect their salvation, but it does influence the quality of their relationship with us. Yes.
Yeah, is there somebody on the switchboard maybe just listening and we're getting all that background from that?
You know, I think I just clicked them off, and I wanted to make sure that I wasn't clicking off you in the process. I think we just resolved it. So
I would just keep coming back at you. Don't you worry about that.
Yeah, so thank you. Yeah, I was trying to make sure I wasn't cutting you off by silencing you by doing it, but I think we've got it now.
Okay.
So there are two audiences that we're supposed to talk to. And while the message is the same, the emphasis is not. And that's the difference that I was trying to make But when you shared with the enthusiasm these additional proofs that Yahweh inspired his testimony through the quantification of the speed of light and things of this nature, that's the kind of stuff we should be sharing with the world. But it's not the kind of stuff that we necessarily want to feed the family. I think this is the kind of stuff we want to feed the family. I think it's just...
I think it's both, because they want to be able to have something solid to stand on, too. Believe me, there's plenty of family that get disrespected by people who claim that they're into scientific evidence, not this nonsense. Well, here's the nonsense, pal, and it's right in line with science. Now what?
So these are the godly eleh, words and statements to borrow. So let's share Yahweh's word, which relationally and beneficially, Asher, you should continually speak to Bar El to communicate God's word to the children who engage and endure with God, Yisrael. And Yahweh said to Moshe, now, this isn't Moshe saying, but I Moshe say, and Yahweh said to Moshe, the one who draws out, pay attention, henna, henna. That, isn't that the word that defines the letter that is repeated in Yahweh's name? Henna means stand up, look up, pay attention.
Behold.
Yeah. Henna, pay attention. I am going to come to you in a cloud, in a protective covering and canopy. This is Ab. Are you familiar with another word that is Ab?
Father.
Father. Now, I think this is, and I'm not positive, but I think this is Ab that is Ein Beyef, as opposed to Aleph Beyef. Now, Aleph Beyef is the first word in every Hebrew lexicon. It means father. And so it is the ram who is the sacrificial lamb, but who is also the head of the flock that will do anything to protect the flock and who will not tolerate a rival and has the power and authority to do anything that's needed. And the ram's horn, of course, is the means of communication. It's the sign of teruah. It's to shout out a warning and to communicate a message. All the concepts of teruah. The Ain Beyef would also be profound, because the Ain is the eye. It's perspective. And it's a protective covering. The whole reason that Yahweh was with them in this way was to provide a perspective, something that we could see and perceive with our eyes regarding the family, how a father leads his family, how a father protects his family. Wasn't Yahweh protecting his children? Wasn't he leading them? Wasn't he nurturing them? Wasn't he sheltering them during this whole entire process? Wasn't he teaching them during this whole process?
Try to remember that.
Right. So you want perspective on the family. You want to see the family and how it operates. That's this Ab. And I want to tell you that while Ab got somehow, some way translated as a cloud, and from, again, I'm giving my interpretation here, I think the letters that comprise the word and how those letters are so similar to Father, and how it adds this perspective, the eye, that gives us perspective on God's role of leading and protecting and walking with us, and taking us to his home, that I think it has nothing to do with the cloud, and everything to do with what those letters convey.
No argument there.
Yeah. So this is this, and then he says, this ob is designed to block some of the light in order for you to hear my word with you nearby, and also for them to have reason to trust you. Okay, so, well, I don't think that this cloud was a formulation of water droplets. What were the children of Israel perfected at this point? Were they perfected or were they flawed? Well, they had gone through matzah, and so those who had observed Pesach and matzah were
they were perfect, and they were enriched.
But were they prone to stumble and to bring religion back into the mix? Were they prone to grumble and say, you know, I'm tired of walking in these damn shoes. I'm tired of eating the matzah. You know, what did you bring us out into the desert to die? I'm thirsty. I want to go back to worshiping the Baal and the golden calf. There were some grumblers there, weren't there?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. What happens when you have the undiminished power of Yahweh's light in vicinity of a mortal and flawed being?
Well, it can melt you.
Melt you. So what Yahweh was saying is, listen, I want you to know that I'm here with you, but I don't want to incinerate you. So I'm going to veil some of my light so that I can diminish this part of my existence that I've set apart here to guide you. I'm going to diminish it so that you can endure it, so that it's beneficial for you and not harmful for you. That's really what he's saying here. You know, I'm designed to block some of the light. I'm going to partially obscure the light, because just like if you on a cloudy day, the sun's light is partially blocked and obscured. That's what Yahweh was telling us, and he's telling us that for a reason. You know, why would God bother to tell us that I'm going to obscure some of my light?
There'd be no reason unless you're telling me I'm going to give you some shade or I'm going to protect you less powerful.
There's only one reason for him to tell us that, which is to communicate to be consistent, so that we know that we have to be adorned in the set apart spirit's garment of light, and perfected and empowered and adopted into his family before we can be in Yahweh's presence. And so the same thing is true for them. And so that nobody misunderstands and say, wait a minute, you can't tell me that you have to go through all that to be in God's presence. If you look at the children of Israel, they were still stumbling along. And God revealed himself right there to them. Well, no, he diminished his life. And that's what has to happen until we're fully empowered and enriched prepared
able
to be in his presence. So, here he says, so, and Yahweh said to Moshe, pay attention, I'm going to come to you in an ob. This ob is designed to curtail some of the light, to diminish some of the light, in order for you to hear my word with you nearby, for them to have reason to trust you. You know, when if you listen to what Yahweh has to say, and you process that, you really listen to him, then you communicate that which is trustworthy. Now, that doesn't mean, God didn't say, and they will trust you, did he? He said, no, they'll give them reason to trust you.
Reason. Yeah.
You know? All right, Larry, when you were communicating, you began the program by saying that you threw out the other day something that you found interesting, that Yahweh had said, and you only got 12 people to give you a thumbs up, which means that for most people, it gave them reason to trust Yahweh, they just paid it no attention.
Right. I mean, there just wasn't much said of it. I thought that was, you know, you talk about rupturing membranes inside.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Once you realize that Alexander, you know, he died in what they thought was a drunken stupor, and then you find out, of course, that, you know, this is what malaria does to you.
He died from malaria, and God described the way that malaria kills. And we know he died from malaria, and we know that that's how malaria kills. So,
that's astoundingly accurate. I mean, it's just mind-bending, really.
And so it gives anyone who pays attention to Yahweh's words reason to trust. That's what he's saying here. If you listen to what I have to say, it will give people reason to trust you. And, you know, if Yahweh was only interested in these people at this time, it would be irrelevant for them to be given reason to be trustworthy. Now, you'll notice there's several things going on here. First is that Yahweh was interested in communicating in a trustworthy way to everyone. That's why he's saying, listen to me, because it empowers you to be trustworthy for others. And second is, what is it that causes them to be trustworthy? What do you say? My word.
Mm-hmm.
If you listen to my word, it will
cause you to be listening.
To his word. Right.
Right. Well,
so if you want to be trustworthy, just simply share his words.
Yeah.
By sharing his words, you give people reason to trust. Doesn't mean they're going to trust.
That's right.
But you give them reason to trust.
Yeah, I mean, if we were to...
Go ahead.
If we were to go out and act like we were just saying, okay, this is what I think you need to do, this is what I think needs to be said. Let me tell you, I've faced down probably as many as 20 of them at a time in debates on FB, especially when I first got into the truth, where I spent a lot of time doing that for a couple of years. And I can tell you that I used his words to answer every argument they had. Still do,
right,
by the way, if I'm in a debate.
Yeah.
And eventually they run away. It doesn't matter if there's 100 of them. I mean,
right,
they're laid bare, naked. You know, that's why they are naked and worthless at the end of it all, because here are people saying that I've dedicated my life to God, to paying attention and to doing what God wants me to do, and they do basically the exact opposite. They pull them into religious channels, and then they want to expand these channels to include everybody. And it's just a horrible thing they do.
Now,
they're enemies.
I want to throw one other thing here that is mind blowing to me.
Okay.
God didn't just say that if you listen to my word, that I will give people reason to trust me, did he?
No.
He says, if you listen to my word, it will give people reason to trust you.
That's pretty deep. That's astounding. Yeah, that's amazing,
deep?
Isn't it?
Yes, right.
It is.
So
profound.
What God is inferring here, not inferring, just publicly stating, is that he wants to communicate his story of the covenant through his children. And he wants his children to share with others his words. And he's setting it up so that his children become his witnesses, and that we are trustworthy when we have examined and considered what he has to say about his covenant. So he is enlisting us in the covenant to communicate it. Could God stand on the mountain and say, you know, be part of my covenant or you're going to sizzle in hell? But that's not his style.
No, they all have to do that.
His style is, you know, I really like this Larry guy. I like this Kirk guy. Fred was talking in the chat room about engaging some Jehovah's Witnesses. God likes that kind of stuff.
Sure.
I could go off and play golf. I am a member of a nice club here. I could go off and play golf. I played a public course with my son. I had a ball. Why? Because I was with my son. We were doing stuff together. We were talking together. You know, I got to listen to him. I got to see his perspective on things that he was doing. That's what God likes. The whole universe was created so that we could have this relationship, and God's not hypocritical. He says, okay, if we're going to have a relationship, I created the universe for this purpose, so let's do it this way. I'm going to share with you, and you share with others.
This so shatters Christianity and Paul, you know, because I'm thinking, and all this is a kind of a backdrop to Paul's conversations the last few days with you.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
Just, I mean, this is just, this Christianity ain't got a leg to stand on if you didn't say anything.
No.
Like this.
But this is the real deal. This is a God who is in our faces, who is eye to eye, shoulder to shoulder, step to step, stride to stride, telling us that it's in our interest to listen to what he has to say, and if we'll consider what he has written regarding the covenant, that he is not only going to treasure us and to value us and to protect us and to set us apart unto him as his family, he said that, I'm going to work with you. I'm going to work through you. We're going to do stuff together. And you're going to become credible and trustworthy because we're working together. You know, it's like I did you all know I've done 3,000 radio shows. And the deal I made with God is that, I would read the material and come to understand the material, but that I would never prepare for one of those shows, ever.
That yeah, I remember you saying that.
Simply be available to serve as a witness in this regard. And I said, the first day that I have a show where that's not enough, then I'm not going to do this anymore. If I have to rely on my own devices to be effective, I won't do it anymore. I just made myself available. And it was astonishingly fun. It was just fun. And in this regard, we're making ourselves available.
Do you know, do you have any idea how many people, and I'm sure you do, but how many people I've talked to that I have shared, you know, Yahweh's words with that tell me, and this is many of them, basically everybody in the family, they were looking, they knew something was wrong, they were looking, and they found Yada's stuff breaking down Yahweh's words in an accurate fashion, and they realized that finally they had found the truth. Now, you know, all you is what I'm doing. I mean, you're doing.
Well, I'm just hearing what Yahweh had to say and thinking about it.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's it. That's it.
Just sharing what Yahweh had to say and trying to explain how it came to this rendering of his words. So that, if I'm wrong, you at least know the process. And if you can do better, I'm hoping you can, that, here's the process. Here's the variables and how it's all put together. And based upon these meanings, here's what it all equates to. This is the conclusion that can be drawn from this. And isn't this extraordinary? We should not be the least bit surprised that Yahweh can use a highly flawed, dented tool to convey his testimony, and that his testimony is credible when rendered as accurately as we can.
Mm-hmm.
Why should we be surprised?
Yeah. I mean, it's not on us.
No,
on him.
It's his words.
That's right.
Yeah, and when we all individually dig deeper, we find more reason for people to trust us. Because we're not promoting ourselves.
No.
We're promoting his covenant. And we're not even promoting his covenant from a earthly perspective. We're sharing our enthusiasm for it. We're sharing his invitation to it. We're sharing the conditions of it. We're sharing the benefits of it. Saying it's great here. We would encourage you to participate.
But you know what's stunning? You know what's truly stunning? You get any number of people, or at least I know I have had this, you probably have Kirk, and you probably have Yana, maybe, where they'll tell you, you know, I believe everything that you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
I believe these words, and they don't act on it. It's
frightening to
weird.
Yeah, and that really is, you've mentioned several times, Kirk, and accurately, that this is destroys Christianity. What God was saying here is completely destructive of the Christian religion. What Larry just said. That the difference between Christianity is a religion of faith, and the covenant is a relationship of actions. It's an action-based relationship.
Based on knowledge and truth.
Right. It requires participation in the covenant.
Get up and walk.
Requires us to respond.
Yeah.
It requires us to listen. It requires us to closely examine and carefully consider the terms and conditions of the covenant. It requires us to embrace them and to act upon them. And that's... A actively engaged relationship is the antithesis of a passive religious faith. They're just the opposite of one another. And God is wants us to respond. He wants us to be active. He wants us to be his witnesses. He wants us to engage
really,
in his
way.
Really,
the attack from the enemy is brutal. And beyond being brutal, it's also effective. It's efficacious. The people think what you're saying to them right out of the gate has something to do with religion. The only thing we have to do with religion is the same thing Yahweh has to do with it: expose and condemn it.
Right.
Right.
You know, but it was really. At the very least, clever. I mean, you could say, you know, he's a one-trick pony. He does the same thing.
But it's clever.
But it is clever. It's effective.
Yeah.
Because by the time religion has invaded your mind,
it's
almost impossible to turn that off. You know.
Yeah. Even though it is so obviously flawed, and even though, more importantly, the offer that Yahweh is making, the offer that is being made through these words right here is so wonderful, so merciful, so generous, so credible. It's amazing that people can't let go of the obvious lie to embrace this marvelous truth.
Yeah, because all Yahweh is really saying is if you walk away from it and you prefer truth over all the lies they dumped on you, don't worry about what you bought into in the past. You know.
Yeah. Can I share something with you? We're at the end of the program, and I don't want this to be.
Absolutely.
In fact, it won't be part of the broadcast, but it'll be part of the recording. Well, I am always thrilled when somebody comes to know Yahweh and becomes part of his covenant and becomes part of this family that we get to share with eternity with. I am actually never bothered in the least when somebody rejects his testimony and says they don't want to be part of it. It doesn't bother me at all. I don't know if that's appropriate or not, but quite honestly, when somebody rejects God, it doesn't bother me.
Well, yeah, I feel the same way. You know, you have to, of your own volition, walk out of Babylon. I mean, that's part of the problem with religion, isn't it? They want to drag you to their religion, kicking and screaming, you know, while they're...
They want to defend their religion. They want to debate you with their religion. Yeah. They want to get their pastor to respond to you or their imam or that sort of thing. And you're saying, no, I really don't have any interest in that. No?
Well, I had a guy
I'll share the truth with you, but whether or not you wish to participate, totally up to you. I really don't care.
Yeah, I was talking to an atheist today, an atheist, that you know, Iranian. You see, when they walk away from Islam, they almost all just become atheists.
Yeah, atheists, right.
And
secular humans. I don't blame them.
Yeah, I don't either. I understand how it happened. And he said, well, Muslims believe, and he wrote some litany of stuff. And I said, you know what? I don't care if they believe in green men on Mars. It doesn't matter to me what they believe.
Are they great people?
Because
who cares?
Proof and evidence has got nothing to do with what somebody believes. And the guy did come back later in a message and say, well, apparently the religious are definitely not as well informed as you are. And I said, no, they're not, or they would not be religious. And I left it at that.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I guess the thing that bothers me most about religion is it's precluded people like this gentleman from coming to know God.
No. Like my dad.
He has equated God with religion, and he knows religion is ridiculous. And so unthinking people are religious. Thinking people are atheists because they are repulsed by the religious God.
That would have been my father.
Yeah.
Mine too.
He hated religion and he hated politics. And honest a man and as you ever want to meet. I mean, but he just couldn't do it. He just would walk away because he don't want to be any part of that religion.
Yeah, so I don't know if it's appropriate or not, but I'm passionate about the family. I love the Iowa's Covenant family. And I'm passionate about exposing and condemning things which preclude people from being part of the family. But I really just don't care about the victims of religion as to whether or not they choose to let go of it or not. The practitioners I despise. The advocates of religion and politics I despise. But the victims, I really have almost no concern over. I'm going to do my best to share the truth with them, but how they respond to it is their affair, and it only becomes my affair if they choose the covenant, and then I'll celebrate with them. Is that too callous?
No. You know, on the other hand, if I don't think that they will mind if I tell you all this, but I got a phone call from Hedro and his wife Angie.
Mm-hmm.
And you know Hedro calls in from time to time. And
from England.
They've been with the family for about a year, and we were talking about the things that got us there. And it's Yahweh's name. He said anything that starts out with a yod, with a hand reaching down to lift me up, he just thought that was the most exciting thing.
Yeah.
And I totally agree with him. You know,
yeah,
and prophecy and stuff. So when sometimes I get a little down because, you know, I'm not like you two. There are lots of people that I've talked to that y'all talk to that seem to join the family, and that seems like I make a little dent in the matter. But when you hear about people like...
I'm just leaving out the 99 that claim to be on the search for the truth and they didn't accept.
You should read my email sometime. The reason that I don't sweat when people say no, and I get excited when people embrace the covenant, is because I think it's the same approach that Yahweh takes. I don't think Yahweh cares, doesn't know, doesn't care about those who ignore him and reject him.
No.
He knows and cares about those who oppose him because there has to be a consequence because of what they do to others. So he has to care about them in a negative sense. He has to be, and he is, overtly hostile towards them. He despises them. And so I'm passionate about those who are in religion and politics who mislead others. And I think we ought to be. But Yahweh does not ever show concern for the great masses. And he says, you know, the prayer of somebody that doesn't observe, that doesn't care about, that doesn't focus on my Torah is an abomination to me. Right? But I'm going to value those like the most precious commodity in the universe that do listen to what I have to say, that do carefully examine and closely consider the terms and conditions of the covenant. So I think it's the approach that causes the overall greatest amount of joy and the least amount of aggravation is to say, you know, I'm going to oppose those, just like Dode, I'm going to oppose those who are opposed, overtly opposed to Yahweh, and I'm going to embrace those who are part of the covenant, and the rest, I really just not concerned about.
Okay. Yes, but still, when we go back, and you know, I mean, there are people that I care that won't listen, my sons, daughters.
Oh, I care about them, too. Yeah, well, of course.
I'm just saying.
Yeah.
You know, it's just an odd thing. But when you have, when you're able to show mathematically, I mean, I want you to just think about that. You know, Yahweh said 6 days, and that's how it works out. He didn't say, he could have said, you know, pick a number between 1 and 17, you know, or 17 billion. He could have done it in days, you know.
Oh, yeah. Or I'm going to give you a plan that's going to come into fruition over 7,000 years, and it's going to culminate with between year 6,000 and year 7,000 with a 7-year period of tribulation. And that tribulation is going to be ushered in with the fall of Damascus, the collapse of the Syrian government, terrorist war where both sides are being armed and equipped by the United States of America, and that.
Hello.
I think I don't know. I can hear you, Kirk, but I can't hear.
He may have been disconnected. So.
Yeah, he may have been, but I mean, that's all right. I mean, once you show people all these things, you would think they would go, "Wow, I better start listening. This is astounding."
Well, you'd think they would care enough to just to at least debate it and say, "Okay, I've." And if you get involved, if you read enough, then you pretty much will be pushed in a corner. You cannot.
Yes.
You won't be able to say it.
Yes.
You're back.
You know, when he told us the story of how Rome won't die but will tread upon the whole earth, and out of Rome comes the Roman Catholic Church, and you know he describes it as a city on 7 hills, and talks specifically.
And also as a snake upon a rock, which is really wild because they claim that Shimon, they named Petrus. And of course he calls clerics snakes. You know, I mean, now, come on, guys. You got word pictures. You've got mathematical numbers. You've got all these things.
You've been putting this together in a billion, trillion years.
Look at Zachariah, where he's talking about this last battle, you know, the battle of Mogi Down.
Fast-flying
war machines with drivers in them.
Right.
Wow. You know, Zechariah was a science fiction writer in, you know, 520 BCE.
More vivid still, the Dode's discussion of crucifixion.
A thousand years before it occurred. Can't get around it. You cannot get around it.
With a medical depiction of it that wasn't even known for another 2,000 years thereafter.
Right. That's right. And you show these things, and it's like they're waiting for the punchline, a trick, or whatever it is.
Right.
And there's nothing there. I mean, other than here's the raw proof of the truth.
Yeah. And well, you know what I do every time with somebody that claims to be an agnostic or an atheist is I tell them that Yahweh said that he created the universe in 6 24-hour days. And we now know through relativity and from the cosmic radiation microwave from the Big Bang, a term that Yahweh himself coined, by the way, that the universe is 15 billion years old. But if you look at the stretching of time as time slows in the presence of great energy or velocity, at the Big Bang, based upon the stretching of time of the wavelength, in the cosmic radiation from the Big Bang,
that we now know that a witness at creation would have experienced creation up to this point in exactly 6 24-hour days. And if you divide 15 billion years by 10 to the 12th power, which is the stretching of time from the cosmic microwave radiation, you get 6 days. Now, if that doesn't convince you that there is a insight in this book that came from the Creator himself that maybe should have some interest to you, then I don't think anything anyone could ever say is going to motivate you to care about God. Well, that's the litmus test that I use. If that doesn't resonate with somebody, you're wasting your breath.
Pedro and Angie, he said, they view themselves as salmon going upstream, that's the characteristic, and I totally agree with him. You have to want it so bad that you'll go after it.
Right.
And
you do.
Go to it to seek it, because everybody else would just happily swim along with the rest of the...
Yeah, downstream, floating along downstream with the current.
Sure.
But you know, if you're floating along downstream with the current, all the other fish, you never see anything new. Man, I like going up the waterfall.
Yeah.
I mean, it's astounding. It's astounding.
Yeah.
There's no way to guess 6 days. There's just no way. Of all the numbers that there are out there to choose from, why 6 days? Well, simple.
Man was created on the sixth day, and man plus God, 6 plus 1, God is 1 = 7, and that's the formula for everything, including the depiction of the seventh dimension, where God not only is, but where we're going to be with him. And the power of that is amazing. But, you know, as he was saying, that you have to be willing to swim upstream.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at Yosha's success ratio with the people that he communicated the Torah to, he was the most effective communicator of Yahweh's covenant in the Torah of all time. And he was, you know, about 1 in 1,000. So we should not set expectations for us any higher than that. You know, 1 in 1,000. But you also notice that everything he said and did was no compromising, blunt, bold, in your face, confrontational. He had a backbone, and he bowed. And it's the thing, you know, Larry, I think we just instantly hit it off, because I like people with a backbone. I like people who stand up tall and don't care who is charging towards them.
Yeah. I know you do, and you side with the person that's standing up, no matter how unpopular that might be, too. I've seen it.
Yeah,
so
that's
the way it is.
And I think that's a characteristic that we have both seen in Yahweh.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Don't put the final exclamation point on it. Well, actually, Yosha does, you know, but I mean, it's just unbelievable.
Yeah, I think the goat is a nice blend of, you know, we're a little gruff. You and I suffer fools poorly. We're pretty gruff. And Dode is really gruff. But Dode is also the artist. He's also got the Kirk in him. That the beauty of the perspective, the way that everything comes together, and the shadows and the light and the colors and, you know, the full artistic palette is also in Doge, just as in with Kirk. I think he's a blend of what we offer and what we bring, which is kind of the fun of being, you know, part of a family.
We have a group.
That's why we have a family. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank goodness we're not all the same. And well, guys, we've come to the end of our hour and a half. We've been recording here, but not broadcasting. But again, I want to thank you for covering for me at very late notice. It was a time that was important for me to spend with my family, and I was happy to be able to do it.
No problem. It was enjoyable. Do you want me to take us out?
Please.
Now it's time to say goodbye.
Happy trails.
To all our company.
good night, Larry.
Okay.
MIC. We'll see you now. Why? Because you didn't care about it. See you, man.
Boy, I tell you what, I'm glad I know Yahweh and not that God of the Quran is going to see everyone.
He knocks you over like you're a bowling pin, man.
Yeah,
he's just
gonna say, hey, dude, when I used halal to say that was good, and when I told you everything I forbid on earth, you'd have as a promise in paradise, and yet I wasn't going to be in paradise. I was going to be in hell. Why couldn't you figure it out?
Really?
Yeah, I'm going to give you eternal life if you kill.
Yeah. That sounds good. That's
eternal life is good, so I want you to kill.
That's just dope, you know. Yeah.
All right, man.
All right, then.
All right, you guys have a good one.
Happy Shabbat.
All right, we've got obviously a lot of meat here on Yo Bell. I'm hoping that we can stay on this. I just really want to kind of wallow in all the things that the Yo Bell portray regarding the covenant. So I think we've got enough material here to focus on for a while.
All right, then. We'll carry on.
All right. Good night. Happy
Shabbat. Good night.
Good night.